Should we move on to scheduling? Everybody said what they needed to say. So our regular board meetings are usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. And because we're a relatively new board and most of us are still working, I just wanted to check in on, we can't make a decision to change times right now, but just to talk about when is best for everyone. Gail, sometimes you have to go to Lopez Marcus.
I get back at 5:30.
You do?
Yeah, I mean, I get back at 5:10, so okay. That Wednesday is not a problem.
Okay.
If it's at 5:30, okay. So.
Okay. And you, 5:30 is?
Yeah, that's a good time of day to do it. Wednesday's usually a good day.
Mm-hmm. And I know it makes a longer day for Pam and Nathan, but.
Early Friday.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's a good payoff. That's a good payoff.
Yeah, we like that. And Carl, how about you?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So we're okay to stick with Wednesdays at 5:30. We'll have to make a formal...
Yeah. We can put together a resolution
for the next meeting, just changing.
You have to have your place set as well and always do a proposal to change the place, or do you just have to have the time and the date?
I'm actually really fine to be here.
Me too.
And I don't know that we need to be in Lainey's office, honestly.
Yeah.
How does everyone else feel about that?
Well, we love it right here. We
don't have to get
outside.
No, it's a lot of
fun.
If we're going to be here all day, it's nice to be in our own spot. You know?
My only concern is capacity. There were meetings where we had 50 people, and that would certainly violate the policy, the fire marshal policy.
What's the max here?
You know, I called, and they're supposed to get back to me.
You really don't know?
He's kind of terrible about getting back to
Yeah. Okay. Some kind of formula.
I might have the formula someplace.
There's two exits. So.
It's complex, apparently. I just thought they could tell me based on square footage, but she just started throwing out all these different criteria. I was like, just have them call me.
Well, do you think we could be flexible about that if we anticipated, like, a dramatic issue that we were taking action on and then thinking, like, yes, we should probably do it at EMS? We're not going to have any drama.
No.
Until we do.
You're going to have some meetings that...
Yeah.
Well, as soon as you put Planned Parenthood on, just the word Planned Parenthood on the agenda, you're going to have a whole EMS full, usually. That's happened in the past with a new board. I don't know if they will, but that really has been the only one that's generated... more of a capacity type thing. Okay. The rest of our issues have really, if you look at the people coming, there's maybe, 7 to 10 people on a topic.
So if we were going to put Planned Parenthood on the agenda.
Planned Parenthood, we might want to put it at
the police. Sorry, guys.
We'll go to the sheriff's department.
But that's the issue with that. The permanent change thing. Yeah. So can you do that?
Yeah, we also don't have any projector equipment or anything for like the Peace Health presentations or for the Prevention Coalition. Mm-hmm. This meeting room does work well for special meetings. This is great, but it does, to me, seem less ideal for regular meetings. Although I can certainly see that it's worth talking about. Maybe it is worth doing. I can just see some potential downsides.
Mm-hmm. And your downsides would be the...
Is it capacity? And then
presentation
stuff. We could invest in something, but it's an expenditure.
Yeah.
So they're not insurmountable concerns. We could, when we anticipate there are large turnouts, then we could, schedule meetings over there. But of course, then you have to be able to anticipate when you're going to need it, which you may not always be able to anticipate.
Yeah. Well, we know when Peace Health does their subsidy report, so we can anticipate that. It's,
So what would be needed in the way of display stuff? A screen? Does the county not have a projector that we could use if we knew something was coming?
But we're not a part of the county, so we can't use our stuff.
We can rent it from the library.
We can rent it from the library. But it depends on their availability.
Yeah.
Because other people, but we can do that. Mm-hmm. we probably want to put something.
Usually people have a screen they pull down or and then a projector.
And table mounted projectors and all that expensive.
No, I don't think so. I think they're pretty inexpensive now. And this is a small building. It's not like we have to produce a huge screen.
I think that one went by way of the Dota one. But I'll check, because I know we had a backup one, but it was old technology and something went and we were unable to secure the parts and to get it repaired. So, but I can definitely consider if there's one available at EMS.
I like the informality of this setting. I feel like we can have a conversation.
Yeah.
But on the at the same time, the members of the public who would attend are all behind us. You know, they're out of the circle, whereas at the EMS building, they're part of the circle. They're kind of part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And that concerns me a little bit too.
Here.
We could rotate here. This table 90 degrees so it was facing this way, and then three, and then one on each side. And we could change the room a little bit to make it so there's seats where we're facing an audience if there was one. So we have options to make it more inclusive, I think, here. But
I love the feeling of being here. I mean, not that I love your office and classroom very much, but this just feels, you know, a little more intimate and, I don't know, relaxed.
Well, didn't we have a challenge with the 5:30 time at the EMS building?
Sometimes we do.
Sometimes
because you've got classes.
I often have classes that but if I know you're always going to have...
Right, same time.
And then another possibility EMS classes could have, because they've filled in, is sometimes they can go over to the fire department.
Oh, for classes?
Let's do a little research on projector. Should we just plan? We can't really do anything about the next meeting, but we can vote on it at our next regular meeting at EMS, correct?
Yeah.
So we can write a resolution. And our resolution can say, like, as needed, we will meet in a larger facility at EMS, more or less. Can't we say that?
I don't see any reason why you couldn't.
Okay.
And you can always change your mind. It just, you know, people get confused if you do. But
yeah,
you
that's a piece that is another thing.
You could also specify special meetings if you know,
yeah,
do all special
meetings
here and regular meetings.
The only disadvantage that we would have, I think, in only being here is that sometimes when we go into executive session and talk to our lawyer or something, there isn't like a room here to really do that. So
you'd have to get people out.
We'd have to get people out.
Yeah. So. Which you can do, but it's not convenient.
No.
Right.
It's not.
We had to do that over there.
We're friendly. Go out in the rain. Yeah.
You?
Just stand outside.
You can cut down on public comment. I don't know. Just put it out there.
It's true.
Well, we only want to cut down the public comment we don't like. So it's hard to push that out.
We had to do that when we were meeting over at the
Hold on, let me rewind that before we start.
Okay, so it sounds like we need to work on this issue a little bit. Can I just ask to Pam about the schedule? Because the commissioner's conference is in June.
Yes, it is June 22nd. Mm-hmm. June 22nd through the 24th. So we would leave like on Sunday afternoon.
So would we want to change that meeting then to the Thursday, the 25th, because you'd be returning that day?
That would have to be, changed.
Okay. So we would just have one Thursday meeting. And then for Thanksgiving and Christmas, they're both, Thanksgiving's falling late in the month
again.
So we would do it early.
Yeah, so maybe the 18th. Mm-hmm.
And would we do the same?
December.
Ooh, that's so early in the month.
Well, the 6th, that's really early, but we could.
It's hard to get everything put together for session.
Do the 30th.
We could do it on the 30th, but I don't know. One year we did do it after the week after Christmas. But
I know, it's.
You know, we could try it for the 16th, but just.
I like the 16th.
Because everybody realizes it's going to be
I like that
anybody
later. Weird week where nobody really knows what day it is. Yeah.
Yes.
Just realize that
between Christmas and the 16th.
Yeah, I think so.
I did too.
Okay. Great. So we have our schedule.
Opinion about that?
Location to
the 16th of December versus the 30th.
Can I just ask? No. Pam, yeah. Is it possible to have the, I mean, is everybody planning on attending the conference?
No, and that's why I wanted them to have the date so they could.
Because I know when the fire commissioners had their conference, they actually, all of them went and they had their meeting during the course of the conference.
Do we all get to go?
You
are we all invited to go?
I cannot go. That is totally the worst time of year for me. So
where is it at?
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Please, I would love it if other people wanted to do that. I mean, if you had two commissioners, that would be
I'd love to go.
Oh, yeah, I wanted as many. I put five people in the budget because I know Lopez, their first year, they all five went. So, and they really thought that they gained something from it. So I put more in the budget. So it would be great if, you know, the ones of you that could go would go. And I've already got the agenda, kind of what they're going to be talking about. And they're going to be talking about interlocal agreements and levy campaigns. And they usually.
Can you go? Those unimportant things, interlocal agreements and levy campaigns. Yeah, we're going to both. Yeah, I could go. That would be great.
So if y'all could tell me, I need to, it's a very popular conference, and if I don't call pretty soon, we don't get a good place to stay.
I love Lake Slam.
Always find a place. Yeah.
No way. Can't
Slam. Yeah,
no
that's
way. Like your. I have like 3 months to make all the money I need for the whole year. I can't leave. All right. Sorry. But I appreciate you guys being up for going. That's really cool. Thank you.
Do
you guys
want to
go?
I have to look at see what we're doing. Yes. Yeah.
Well, now you know the date.
Sure enough.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, I think that covers that.
So it's the 22nd of June?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, going on the 21st.
Go on the 21st.
Maybe on, like, Sunday.
And coming back on late.
That late.
Late
on
Wednesday.
The Wednesday, yeah. Okay. Late Wednesday.
Okay. Did everyone get a chance to review the protocols?
Mm-hmm.
And is there any commentary? No? None from the lawyer. That's a good sign. And Nathan, would you like to add anything to this discussion on our protocols?
I put together a little presentation, which is optional if the board want to.
How long is this said presentation?
This presentation is from between 2 minutes and 30 minutes.
Depending on the questions,
about 10.5 minutes.
If you want to go, we don't need to keep you for all of this. This is not really relevant to you necessarily. So. If you'd like to stay, we'd love to have you.
Rude to get up and leave.
Not at
and
all. I should have let you know that earlier since we picked your brain already.
Go home and enjoy
the code
the
of
evening.
Ethics are fascinating. You can go.
Yeah, I feel like that.
You a long time ago.
Well, I didn't feel held down.
I just felt like thank you very much. I think that was really helpful for all of us.
And thanks for putting that all together.
You are godsend, Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, we just.
You are a godsend, Lainey Bolt. Yeah. Oh, my, I'm Paige.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we just need to figure out how to support the whole program.
And when? Like many
how soon we have to.
That's, I work too much?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know you do.
That is true.
Right. That's a real, that's on the agenda for the next meeting. I'll figure out.
Mm-hmm. That and my Medicare.
Do you think Margaret Longley would be a good candidate for stepping into that role a little bit with her PA?
She might be. I can sincerely, honestly say that a lot of what made it easier for me was that I did go to nursing school and I do have a degree in that. It made it easier to move into from versus just having been an EMT to go straight from 911 to that.
Right.
Wouldn't that, no other educational piece, I guess I would say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's not saying you couldn't do it with only being an EMT, but the ease of doing it and what I already practiced in clinical long ago in the olden days back in the Stone Age.
Is there, I have a question, if there's a requirement to, like, put out a job description and take people applying for things in the EMS? I mean, county, we're all about, it all has to be transparent and open and public, and you have to sort through your people and have people interviewed and all that. Is that the same?
All our guidelines right now are that if there's a position open, we would offer it internally first, and then put it out to the community, and then move on to a national kind of thing if it ever came to that. And I think that, you know, I think they did that for a chief at one point in time where it went national, national publication. But other than that, that's also been one of the things that we're working on too, is getting some very formalized job descriptions, because what we've had is just that, you know, we realize we need full-time help. We hire somebody who is there, and then we have them do things instead of, here's the job that needs to be done. What person do we bring in, or what people do we bring in to handle the job? And so that's been my kind of ongoing challenge for this 9-10 months that I've been at it, is trying to come down where, explain the task at hand and find the people to fill it, rather than having a person and what can they do.
Exactly.
So that's kind of where we're at with.
Well, that's sort of how my assistant came about too. We started out internal to EMS, and then fire, and then countywide. I mean, we saw people, we interviewed people from other islands even.
But yes.
As descriptive as one would like. Anyway, thank you guys for your
time.
Thanks
so much.
Thanks. Have a good evening.
Have a good evening.
Take care, everyone.
Okay. Can you send me 5 minutes? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we got these. We stepped back into the 20th century here, since we don't have. Let's see here. So these are my slides. This is to demonstrate why I use typewritten documents typically. Okay, first thing to understand is that when we're talking about code of ethics, there are kind of different sets of rules. The top level rules are really the state code of ethics, which is actually a law. It's an RCW. You can get charged with a crime for breaking it. But it's not like a large RCW, and mostly it deals with what's called financial interest. And I'm sure that Kyle or Warren could explain this better and more accurately than me. But basically, you can't use your position to secure special privileges for people based on their relationship to you. It doesn't mean that if, say, you're a governor, you can't pass a law that changes salaries for all employees in the state, because that's not based on their relationship to you. You're passing a general rule or law. It's preventing arbitrary use of public money. Enforceable by law, special privileges. Also, there are federal and state laws of various kinds dealing with ethical issues. And then there's this district code of ethics. This district code of ethics, if you read it through after reading these other laws, you'll find that there are things in here which are from state and federal law, in which case those provisions are enforceable under the law. But if they aren't in the law, then these district code of ethics can't be used to charge you with anything. They're not a law, to the extent that they're not actually in law. But what they do represent is sort of a district consensus on behavior, on how you should be and not be. And you can be censured in theory. You could have the board vote to hold you in violation of the code of ethics and censure you. that's about the extent of what you can enforce based just on district code ethics. But its enforceability, in my mind, is neither here nor there. It's a useful document that expresses your collective agreement on how you should be. And these can be amended, and you can make them yours. They've not been amended for a while, but they can be. And then the last source of ethics is your personal ethics. Just because it's not in some code somewhere doesn't mean that you can't. The first time you do this doesn't mean that you can't.
Get them out of whiteboard.
No kidding.
We actually. Honey, we ordered.
Just a cool. Where's the like the triangle?
So, have you all had a chance to read them through at least once? Then I don't really want to kind of belabor each section.
Look out.
Each
section.
Yeah,
stick it on the wall, or you can stick it on the.
You gotta buy you a tripod at least, so you can like.
You can stick it on the cabinet or the wall.
Or put it on the name.
It's all right.
The cabinet.
Or stick it on the top.
I'll just fold it up. I'm not going to stick it.
A little Vanna White.
I'll be Vanna.
Okay. Nice job.
So, this document has both a prologue and an introduction, okay? Basically, is saying there are lots of different districts all over the state, all over the country, pass these different codes of ethics. And you can look at them, read them through, and they have a lot of similarities. And the introduction just says that it's promote ethical conduct. I won't get into the difference between morality and ethics here, it's sort of a different subject, but basically we can say ethics is being good in a professional sense. Applicability, this applies to commissioners. That's the entire sentence, it's one sentence. That means that these do apply specifically to commissioners, but it sets a standard of behavior for the rest of us as well. Using the code, pretty early in the code, they point out you still have free speech, okay?
Nice.
Free speech is in the Constitution of the United States, and the District Code of Ethics isn't going to prevent you from being able to speak your mind. The Code of Ethics does try to set some rules and general guidelines so that the district as a whole maintains a sense of cohesiveness to the public. I'm not sure how else to put that. And to kind of build up your political capital with the public. It's good as a board since we're all part of the district. Mm-hmm. It's useful for the public to be able to see us in a positive light.
In a unified way.
In a unified
way. Even though you have free speech, if your board makes a decision you don't agree with, your board still made a decision.
Right.
And you might not agree with it, but you're not meant to go out in public and speak against it.
Try to like write newspaper articles pillorying fellow commissioners, yeah, and that sort of thing. Try to avoid that. But if you
really
do it,
to not
we can't stop you. So thank you for that. That's great. Sure. And you're all going to be in that position at some point.
I'm going to try to restate this.
Yeah, because we're going to hire you.
See, Vanna doesn't want to see you.
There, you did it.
Hey. Yay.
It's all right. It's
fine. No, I think
we did it.
It's going to work. This is how your time will be limited. It's how long it stays up.
Next slide.
Next slide, right.
Okay. Fundamental responsibilities in this next section. That's kind of an interesting section if you look at it, because it's very short. And I was reading through it, and I was trying to figure out, what are they getting at here? Because, to be honest, I wasn't entirely sure. I think what they're talking about is fundamental responsibilities, where it says, the discharge of this responsibility requires the district to operate its hospital and other healthcare facilities in a competitive manner. I think what this is talking about really is your financial responsibilities as commissioners. That, you know, and it can be particularly hard when you know everyone and you've got to set pay policies. And that sort of thing. I remember Pam can tell you stories about the old medical center and disputes over pay and stuff and having to cut people's pay and furlough people. They just didn't have money. And those are hard things, but, you know, that's the role of the board. And so I think that's why they kind of enshrine that there in its own section. The fifth section really is what you think of when you think of the code of ethics. And here when I was trying to summarize it, I just said, be good. We'll talk about it a little bit more in a little bit though. Let's try to go through the rest of these provisions quickly. The enforcement of the code of ethics, you can't be sued because of this, and it says so explicitly in the code. The district is not creating additional liability for you because of this. Again, we're getting back to this notion that, you know, you're not a legislative body and you don't set laws. You know, when you pass a resolution, that's not a law. It's a sort of binding policy for the district, but it's not a law. So you can't be sued because of this. And that may at some point happen to you where you're grateful for that, because it can become subjective at a certain point whether or not someone thinks you're following. So just keep that in the back of your mind, that really this is a good faith sort of set of rules. Reporting procedures do establish kind of this elaborate system for evaluating complaints. But I don't, have we ever had to use it, Pam?
To what?
This, I don't think we've ever actually had to go through the formal process of investigating an allegation. But it basically says that the chair can establish.
Yeah, procedures. I did it one time.
You did it one once. Time?
There you go.
Yeah. It was not fun, so.
No, I wouldn't imagine so. It's not great. It's not really where you want to be, but there are rules for it. A waiver. You can actually ask for a waiver from this code of ethics. I don't know under what situation that would arise, but it's there. Okay. Section 10 is review. It says it has to be reviewed every year. That's why we're doing this. It's actually in the code of ethics. It's passed by resolution by the board. All of you signed it. And this is why, because of this section that says that it needs to be reviewed. And that goes dovetails with the affirmation, section 12, that you have to affirm in writing. And yes, I misspelled writing. But there's this little
you
section.
You wanted to see if we were paying attention.
Exactly. And it can be updated. So you can finally take the staff. Fundamental responsibilities. We kind of talked about this already. But I talked about how I wasn't really sure what this meant, this section on fundamental responsibilities, but that your financial responsibilities really are core to your role as a commissioner in this section 4, fundamental responsibilities. But I would add that all of you should be familiar with the commissioner job duties, a document that was generated last year. It's a great summary of the role of a commissioner. It's not in the code of ethics, but it was intended to supplement that. And then also review RCW 70.44. A hospital district is a statutory institution. It's a special purpose district established by RCW 70.44. And if you read this subsection 60, it outlines the powers and duties of a hospital district, what you can and can't do. And that's important to know. I wrote this whole section here. You will spend the next 2 to 6 or more years explaining what a public hospital district is. Make sure you can. And that's what that RCW 70.44.60 does.
That's in the big binder, right?
Yeah.
People do ask what it is. Yeah. They have no idea what it is.
All the time.
Yeah. But that's in there, right?
For a junior taxing.
Then you have to explain what a junior taxing district is. Like, so are you part of the county? No, we're not part of the county. So if I could just digress briefly, I was at a church dinner, and there were some people from out of town there, and we were talking, and it turned out he worked for a public hospital district in Skagit. And so he goes, oh yeah, I work for the public hospital district in Skagit. I go, oh yeah, I work for the public hospital district here. And his wife, I kid you not, turns like this, he goes, wait, you work for the public hospital district, not the hospital? And he's like, yes, dear, I work for the public hospital district. So she didn't even know.
She didn't even know, that's all.
And honestly, I'm not sure my wife does either. So.
And does she want to know?
No.
What do you think?
She doesn't. So, okay. Yeah.
It is interesting, yeah.
Just be glad you're not Carl having to explain, I work for EMS, but it's part of the hospital district. And
say, okay. So you work for the hospital? So
No, we don't work for the hospital.
We're not part of the hospital. It's even worse for him. At least, I'm sorry. Okay. So we'll just briefly go through this main section, the section 5, principles and practices, and it's the last one. Just kind of briefly going through the different sections that can be kind of broadly categorized into this. Section A through J all has to do with that financial interest thing I was talking about earlier on. And when you read this through, much of it is in the state code of ethics. And so this is one of those areas where this isn't an optional thing. Yes, it's in our district code of ethics, which aren't binding, but those portions are in the law. But they're also very easy to follow. This isn't a hard thing. We all know that you shouldn't like go out and hire a spouse and give them a big raise, or like steer a contract for a building project to a relative. You know you shouldn't do that. It's not hard, but there it is. Okay. K through L, confidential information. There's a few sections on that. And I will say this, when it says that you shouldn't share confidential information, it's important to understand that there are different kinds of confidential information. There are really bright red line confidential information that you cannot share in any circumstances and can be penalized under law for. One example is HIPAA violations. And you've been given your HIPAA training. But there's other kinds of confidential information. Probably the next most serious kind of confidential information that you can't share is executive session information. Anything that happens in an executive session is confidential under the law. And it's true that the penalty is not very serious. And it's very hard to prove when someone violates that rule. But nonetheless, it is against the law. We try to avoid doing things against the law just because there isn't some really severe penalty for it. And so that's probably the next category is that executive session, confidential information. Probably, you know, thinking this through in my head, trying to think of these different categories of confidential information, the next category of confidential information are things that are exempt from disclosure. And when we say exempt from disclosure, what we're talking about is the Public Records Act. Public Records Act says that you must share all of your records, documents with the public, except certain things. And those certain things are called exemptions. But it's important to understand that when something is exempt from the Public Records Act, it doesn't mean you must exempt it. Okay? We may, as a district, choose not to exempt information. And so in that sense, it's confidential, but you can decide not to have it be confidential. But it's important to keep in mind that as an individual commissioner, you don't get to make that decision. It's a decision that the board needs to make. And that responsibility can't just be done by you. You can't just decide, I'm going to disclose this information. So there's different categories of confidential information. Probably that's kind of a big topic, and I've just sort of touched on it briefly, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but if you can start thinking of it in those terms, that when we talk about confidential information, there are these different kind of baskets of types. Simultaneous offices, it's under state law. You can't hold simultaneous incompatible public offices. I'm not sure exactly what examples of that would be, so I'm not going to try, but that's under state law somewhere. If you have some other public position of some sort and you're worried that it's incompatible, come talk to us. We can talk to our legal counsel. We can work it out. Policies and procedures, it simply says that you're bound by the district policies and procedures. But to be honest, I'm not sure what that would mean. Policies and procedures, I don't know that we have a whole lot of printed, bound policies and procedures. There were at one point, the medical center had a big, thick manual. And so I think maybe this is a holdover from that. It's big, thick policies and procedures manual. That actually is still legally in effect. It sets PAM and I's PTO time and that sort of thing. But most of it is now sort of irrelevant, mostly relating to running a medical center. You don't run a medical center anymore. And at some point, we should have our own updated policies and procedures, at which point we would be bound by them. Lainey was talking about triaging things in terms of what you do and stuff. And that's kind of been on the bottom when you're working overtime and tons of hours and stuff. It's not necessarily the first thing you think of to revise your policies and procedures. But we should, and when we do, you'll be bound by them. Okay, superintendent administers the district. That's pretty straightforward in section subsection O. And then P to Q shall comply with legal demands of various kinds. You get a subpoena, you have to comply. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. If for some reason that were to happen, come talk to us. We do occasionally get legal demands for health records and such relating to court cases. We comply with those. Okay. R through S basically can be summarized as prepare for your board meetings and debate respectfully. It's important that there is neither too much unanimous consent nor too little. You're not really here to just all agree on everything, because then we just need maybe one or two of you. And it's important each of you bring your own perspective, but at the same time keep things cordial, work together, remember that we're on the same team. Subsection T, don't represent the board if you don't actually represent the board. This can be a tricky one sometimes. I would suggest just reading through section T on your own and think about what it means. I'm not going to try to define it for you. And sometimes this can be ambiguous. To what extent, for instance, the chair can or can't speak for the board. Those sorts of things can be tricky. Can you go out and publicly represent your position? Yes, but if it's different from what the board's position is, then you need to say so. There are a few instances where you've sort of delegated a certain amount of this authority. For instance, I'm the public information officer, supervised by Pam, which means I represent the board to the public, and that can be, you know, I deal with the press releases and things, but that too can be tricky sometimes. And I don't pretend to have all the answers, you know. A lot of times you have to distinguish between what you can formally do and what you should do. When I put together a press release and I know that maybe people will have some different opinions on it, I'll go and talk to those different people. Typically for a district press release, I'll go and I'll talk to the chair. I'll talk to the superintendent. If it has to do with EMS, I'll go and talk to Carl. That formal authority to act, what that says is when you're getting all this information from people, you send out something, you get five different sets of comments. You do have the ability and right to be able to make those determinations. But it doesn't mean you go off and just do your own thing. And so sometimes this stuff can be tricky. I'm not going to pretend otherwise.
It slows things down.
It does. Okay, you're allowed to campaign, section U, and you may at some point have to campaign. You didn't this time, but you may at some point have to, and you may have disagreements with the people with whom you're campaigning, and that's probably a particularly important time where you don't present yourself as representing the board on things. You disagree with your opponent, you know, you shouldn't be saying things like, well, the board says this and this, and they're on my side. Try to avoid that. And then this last section, B, don't do illegal stuff.
We'll try not to.
Refrain from any illegal, unethical, inappropriate conduct. That's probably...
We'll try
your best. Okay. Each of you need to review these on your own. You need to sign this. You don't need to sign it now, but you do need to sign it by the end of the month. Turn them in to myself or Pam. We scan them in and we actually post these on our website. And occasionally people even ask for them. So, are there any questions people want to talk about?
Thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah.
Was that quick enough?
Yeah, that was perfect. Okay.
Just
thank
perfect.
You.
Just the right amount of
thank you, sir.
Can we can sign this now and give it to you if we
you can. If you're ready now, you can do it now.
Okay. And I have signed this before. Do I have to sign it every year?
Yes.
Every year. Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
But it could change if you
want. You can change that if you want, but that's the way it is right now.
That's how organizations run.
Yeah. Simple.
People come back.
Good reminder.
Yeah.
So next week we're going to talk about the CAG report. I know we've been here for an hour and a half already, so I don't want to do something people aren't wanting to do that. We could certainly table it for another time. Because, you know, we've been here. But, you know, it was sort of just as we're coming up to speed on integration, I know that some of you have studied it, read it. I just didn't know we wanted to spend some time here where we don't have much of an audience. You know, Warren and I.
Hey, who's saying about Warren?
Oh, he's the only one here.
Good. I just have to tell the commission you got a date starts in 4 months.
Were there any things that somebody wanted to highlight? Was that part of putting it on your
agenda? It was in your stack of papers.
I thought it was sort of a starting point.
I can grab one for you.
I'm not attached to talking about it.
If it's the only other thing we talk about, I would be. If it's what.
Well, we were going to talk about the Quality Assurance Committee and Rachel's comments. So yes, Warren.
One thing, if I went to a lot of the meetings, one meeting I would want to hear over again about an integration of the audit people. Mm-hmm. With very specific, the CAG did not ask very specific questions. They sort of listened to them talk about it, but as you get into it and you're doing evaluations of running property and capital equipment, et cetera, et cetera. And the audit issues, and certain laws, to a report that I don't think is evident in the report is what the audit said.
And that was the meeting with John Colseth and Lenny Henley. Is that right? Is that who you're talking about? Yeah, it was the
assistant. Can you do each one?
Well, Nathan would know because he was there, and there are audio recordings of those. The meeting with Melinda.
Oh my goodness,
John.
There are so many audio recordings.
Oh, are there?
Oh,
for all of them. Mm-hmm.
You recorded all of them.
One meeting isn't that many, but I forget.
There might be one. Yeah, I do recall maybe but there
would be
one.
Right.
There was a lot of information in that meeting. I was also at that meeting, and it was really insightful in terms of what things can go on the ballot when and all of that.
And just the different reports and their own legal stuff.
Thank you, sir. There are certain audit things that might be looking at other specific questions.
Yeah.
The whole CAG report, but I don't think
it's
happening.
You're saying it's not, we wouldn't find that here.
Yeah, that.
The document.
It's not there. Okay. They weren't looking at the specifics. And then if you can thank the old commission, we did get indoor plumbing this year.
You know, I think any more information that any of us want, obviously, is out there, and we can listen to any of those.
There's a lot. A lot of minutes, too. Yeah. You see the CAG report, but there were piles of minutes as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if I can, too, just please remember that, you know, the CAG report, it's non-binding. It was a citizens advisory group. Mm-hmm. A lot of the suggestions they made, you know, they did a lot of homework. They did a lot of work and tried to put together a good roadmap. There were some things that were suggested. Well, in fact, there were some things made as absolute recommendations that as boots on the ground, as operations, mm-hmm. both Chief Collins and I have said, no, we can't implement that. Mm-hmm. The whole mandating of all personnel being cross-trained, That was a tried and failed experiment on Orcas. They decimated their volunteer response. Mm-hmm. And we said, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. There are people who have an affinity for EMS, and there are people who have an affinity for fire. And to try to mandate and force that, It's just not the right move. Our plan moving forward is to hope that we would, and I'm just picking out one thing as an example, is that we would facilitate that. We would try to make that happen, and as you move forward, and that becomes the expectation. If you've got a full-time position open and you've got somebody who's just an EMT or just a firefighter and one who's cross-trained, obviously a cross-trained person becomes a more attractive employee. And you can make that transition over time rather than mandating within the time frame that they've given.
Yeah, if you have a paramedic who doesn't want to haul hoses.
Right, or it's not necessarily the right thing for a paramedic with that level of training to be doing.
Right.
Do I want to put him in a burning building and then all of a sudden there's a heart attack because now I got to pull the whole crew out? Yeah, so there's those operational pieces that are there. As much research that the CAG did and as much good work as they laid out the groundwork, there were some holes and there were some gaps, and there are some pieces that, given, you know, doing the day-to-day operations, we may not be able to implement in that particular manner, or there are, you know, different timelines and things like that. So while I certainly respect the amount of work that was put in here and the amount of time and effort researching a lot of those things, there are some things that just don't make sense, you know, that we can't do. There are a couple of things that, you know, like...
There were some things on, I think George Johnson had a couple of recommendations.
Yeah,
he did, like, some districting or financial side that were, like, not correct.
Right, and he did one where he said, well, if the Outer Islands don't come into the fire district, we'll just provide the service for them, regardless. Right. There's only so few of them and so few calls. And that's just downright illegal. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, so those kinds of things we have to keep in mind and keep an open mind with that. This is guidelines, it's a roadmap, mm-hmm. and it's done by people who, you know, I think Mark Tompkins is a volunteer firefighter. Mm-hmm. Dan Paulson was a paramedic, and he was the first one in the county, but that was 30 years ago.
A very long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Things have changed quite dramatically. And so, and not to say that
no,
Dan,
I think you have,
you know,
but no, I think it's very, that's very legitimate.
Absolutely,
you know?
Great perspective to all of that, mm-hmm. and those are all really important kinds of things. So, that's the only thing that I would say. I'd put that caveat out there. That and then the other thing is that as that CAG report was given, and the boards respectively decided, okay, we're going to go to the next step with an integration committee, that a lot of the things have been implemented, and we've been working with this as kind of that guideline and starting to answer some of those questions and put those things in place. The annexation is moving forward with the town. The Outer Islands is moving forward. The licensing is taken care of. All those kinds of things are done. And it's just how we get to that end goal. And those are the details that we've got.
And we've got some steps that we're taking, like the one of the appraisal and the building.
Yeah.
We're starting to, we need to start looking at sort of what sort of assets we have laying around and valuing those and taking further steps. There's one thing that sticks for me that, that the fire board really doesn't want to expand the number of commissioners on their board. And I think it's important for us to kind of look at that and discuss what that means to us and what that means in terms of representation for the public and how a three-person board varies from a five-person board and talk about that.
There's a good report it was Commissioner Smith from the Public Hospital District and Commissioner Cardinale were kind of tasked with that and looking at some things. And there's a very good report that's on the website right now that kind of shows the results of their work. They did comparisons across the state, you know, in terms of size of population, number of calls, what boards, you know, looked like, and they came up with a recommendation. Mm-hmm. So,
what was their recommendation?
To maintain three.
Yeah, that is on the website. If you are interested in that, I can find it for you. You're obviously not necessarily bound by that, but it's
on their fire website.
It's on our
integration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information on our website.
There is, and we're going to work on trying to present it better. But there is a lot of stuff on there, particularly about this project. There's just been so much work done.
So I don't understand what the downside of five would ever be. I think as a safety measure or as an extra sorting through of information and decision making, it makes sense to me to have 5 versus 3. I can't really see any negative to having 5 versus 3. Personally, I mean, I can see why not having 11, but yeah. 5 doesn't seem like a whole lot.
Learned that lesson.
So anyway,
I think the sticking point is, if in fact the integration is done in such a way that EMS, medical services, combines under the fire district to be a fully integrated emergency services agency, the problem is, as a hospital district, you can recommend that you think a 5-person board is better, but you can't mandate that because it's their board, mm-hmm. and they would have to change their rules mm-hmm. and go out for the vote to expand
and
their
board. And the CAG lays that out, how to do that.
So, I mean, that's